Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we have some very important stories nationally as well as major local news across our region. The Senate Republicans' health care bill is out, and it severely impacts senior citizens and others who rely on Medicare. Hear how Californians could be affected by the bill, which may come up for a vote before the 4th of July. On our Capitol report, learn about a Supreme Court ruling granting immunity to Bush administration officials for detention and alleged abuse of Muslims after the 9/11 attacks. Plus, hear why President Trump is now being investigated by the special prosecutor for obstruction of justice. In honor of World Refugee Day this week, we'll have facts on refugees right here in San Diego and around the world. We'll also have a report on two Navy sailors from San Diego confirmed dead in that collision off the coast of Japan. Then, here in East County, learn what El Cajon is doing to help reduce homelessness, and hear why Councilman Colosio is drawing criticism for age-based bashing of a fellow council member. We'll tell you what's brewing in Lemon Grove, including a new zoning law to allow alcohol manufacturing businesses to open up shop. Hear about a fire in Del Cerro sparked by a balloon. This week's heat wave broke an all-time record for the hottest day ever recorded in San Diego. Find out just how hot it got on today's show. On Green Scene, hear why a final payment for land in the El Monte Valley means good news for Helix ratepayers, but bad news for lakeside residents battling to stop a sand mine. At the Hamul Dulzura Planning Group, discussion over a proposal to ban target shooting on public land grew heated, and we'll have details. La Mesa City Council is weighing budget actions to address its rising pension costs. And this weekend at Grossmont Center in La Mesa, a local radio DJ will be broadcasting from a snake pit, all to help hungry children in our region. County supervisors have appointed a new interim district attorney. And out in Lakeside, firefighters made a most unusual rescue. At Three Sisters Falls, more rescues were made by sheriff deputies during triple-digit heat. And in Santee, an inattentive driver wound up airborne. Ban on alcohol and marijuana in parks takes effect in Lemon Grove this summer. And on Destination East County, hear about the hottest festivals and events from major music superstars in concert to 4th of July festivities, including the return of the Lake Murray Music Festival and fireworks. And finally on sports, hear the latest on that Soccer City proposal that's heading to the ballot. So stay tuned for all of these stories on the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Health advocates warn that the Senate GOP bill to repeal and replace Obamacare would cause millions of Californians to lose their health care by phasing out the Medicaid expansion and then capping the program altogether. The Better Care Reconciliation Act, or BCRA, lifts the government mandate for people to have insurance and lets states allow insurance policies that exclude services like maternity and mental health care. Anthony Wright with Health Access California says the bill would harm many different groups.
It still eliminates the Medicaid expansion that 4 million Californians depend on, but it also has a harsher cap on the entire program, which 14 million Californians depend on, including a third of the state, half of all children, and two-thirds of all nursing home residents.
The Senate bill also lets insurance companies charge Americans ages 50 to 64 five times what younger people pay compared to the current limit of three times. And it lifts a ban on charging much higher premiums to people with pre-existing conditions. Supporters of the BCRA say it will reduce the federal deficit and give people access to lower-cost plans that cover fewer health benefits. The Congressional Budget Office said the House version of the health care overhaul would cause 23 million Americans to lose their insurance over the next 10 years. Its analysis of the new bill is expected on Monday. Wright predicts the Senate version will decrease access to health care on a similar scale.
From just a pure numbers point of view, this is an over $800 billion cut to Medicaid to fund a $900 billion tax cut for health insurers, drug companies, and the wealthiest.
The BCRA faces an uphill battle, though, as multiple Republican senators have already announced their opposition. At this point, the bill is set for a vote next Thursday. If it passes the Senate, House leaders have said they want to vote on it before the July 4th recess when lawmakers go back to their districts. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Jonathan Getz with our Capitol Report. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that former Bush administration officials cannot be sued for allegedly violating constitutional rights, protecting against illegal search and seizures. The case, Ziegler v. Abbasi, was filed by Muslim immigrants who alleged that they were profiled based on their religion, arrested and detained in harsh conditions after the September 11th terrorism attacks. The High Court granted immunity to former Attorney General John Ashcroft, former Immigration and Naturalization Service Commissioner James Ziegler, and former FBI Director Robert Mueller. Mueller is now the special prosecutor appointed to investigate Russian hacking of U.S. elections and Trump administration ties to Russia. The Supreme Court did, however, remand a case against the prison's warden back to a lower court to determine if he may be held accountable for allegedly allowing guards to physically abuse the prisoners detained after the 9/11 attacks. Rachel Mirapol, senior staff attorney for the Center for Constitutional Rights, stated after the decision, "We are very disappointed with the court's dismissal of our client's claims. The court's decision allows for high-level officials to violate the Constitution without fear of personal accountability, a dangerous message in this time of rampant state-sponsored discrimination against Muslim and immigrant communities." But the court's decision, authored by Justice Anthony Kennedy, held that in times of national crisis, there is a balance to be struck between deterring constitutional violations and freeing high officials to make the lawful decisions necessary to protect the nation in times of great peril. Kennedy concluded, "The proper balance is one for Congress, not the judiciary, to undertake." According to the lawsuit, over 700 individuals were rounded up on immigration charges as persons of interest and held without bail, in some cases for months. According to the Center for Constitutional Rights, those detained were arrested based on citizen tips reporting such as activities as Arabs working long hours or Middle Eastern men renting post office boxes. A press release from the organization states, "Despite the clearly discriminatory nature of such tips, and though the Bush officials knew there was no reason beyond the men's race, religion, and ethnicity to suspect them of terrorism, Mueller ordered that each be thoroughly investigated, and Ashcroft ordered that everyone who fit the profile be held as a suspected terrorist until cleared by the FBI. Many of the men were held in solitary confinement, beaten, deprived of sleep, and denied the ability to practice their religion," the suit states. "At times, they were subjected to violence, such as having their faces smashed into a t-shirt pinned to a wall with a picture of the American flag. The blood-stained flag reportedly hung on the prison wall for months. All of the men were eventually cleared of any ties to terrorism, but they were deported anyway for immigration violations, such as overstaying visas." Benamar Banata, one of those detainees, now lives in Canada, but returned to watch the case argued before the Supreme Court. He recalled his experience, "The worst thing that can happen to a human being," and said of the verdict, "It is only by holding high-level officials to account when their policies are ineffective or discriminatory that a country can properly heal," adding that he is very disappointed in the verdict. The landmark case was heard by only 6 of the 9 Supreme Court justices and was decided by a slim 4-2 vote margin. Justice Sonia Sotomayor had served as judge on an appeals court ruling that reinstated the lawsuits against the federal officials, and Justice Elena Kagan had worked on the case while serving as U.S. Solicitor General. Neil Gorsuch, the newest justice appointed by President Donald Trump, also did not participate in the decision since he was not on the high court when the arguments were presented. Justices Stephen Breyer and Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote a blistering dissent, which Breyer read from the bench. He compared the majority's decision to other times when the courts turned a blind eye to discriminatory actions, such as the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. "In wartime as well as in peacetime," the dissent concludes, "it is important, in a civilized society, that the judicial branch of the nation's government stand ready to afford a remedy for the most flagrant and patently unjustified, unconstitutional abuses of official power.
Major news organizations, including the Washington Post, have announced that President Donald Trump is now under investigation for possible obstruction of justice. The Post reports that Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller, in overseeing Russia's role in the 2016 election, is interviewing senior intelligence officials as part of a widening probe that now includes the president himself over possible obstruction of justice for firing the former FBI director in an effort to stop the investigation. Among those who have agreed to be interviewed by Mueller's investigators are Mike Rogers, head of the National Security Agency, Daniel Coates, director of National Intelligence, and Richard Leggett, former deputy of the NSA. Other mainstream media have confirmed the significant escalation of the investigation by Mueller. Trump, in an angry tweet, lashed out news of the obstruction of justice probe, calling it the greatest witch hunt in American political history, led by some very bad and conflicted people. One other president in the past has complained of being targeted for a witch hunt, Richard Nixon, who resigned from office to avoid impeachment on grounds that included obstruction of justice. Meanwhile, other administration officials, apparently concerned that they too might be caught up in the probe, are lawyering up. Vice President Pence is the latest to announce that he has hired an attorney to represent him, and Trump's personal lawyer has even reportedly hired outside legal counsel for himself. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
June 20th was World Refugee Day, a date established by the United Nations to acknowledge the plight of refugees and raise awareness of the world's most vulnerable population. In 2016, the population of refugees and displaced persons surpassed all previous global records since World War II. According to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, approximately 65 million people are displaced, nearly the combined population of California and Texas. Of those, 21 million are refugees, and half are women and children. Since 1975, California has resettled about 700,000 refugees. An estimated 150,000 refugees live in San Diego County, where about 4,100 refugees came here in the last fiscal year. Our region's first refugees came from Southeast Asia toward the end of the Vietnam War. The most recent refugees have come from Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The United Nations defines refugees as people fleeing conflict or persecution. By international statute, refugees are free from being expelled or returned to dangerous situations. Locally, the County of San Diego is the largest refugee resettlement site in the state of California. It is also home to the second largest population in the U.S. of refugees from the Horn of Africa. To learn more about San Diego refugees, visit NileSisters.org, a local organization helping refugees, and check their report titled Refugees by Numbers. You can also volunteer at local refugee assistance groups to help those newcomers fleeing tragedies as they seek brighter futures for themselves and their families here in America, like generations of immigrants before them. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
The Department of Defense has released the names of 7 sailors who were reported missing, but have since been confirmed dead after the Navy destroyer USS Fitzgerald collided with a merchant vessel from the Philippines on Sunday, June 18th at 2:30 a.m. 2 of the sailors were from San Diego County, 25-year-old Petty Officer 3rd Class Shingo Alexander Douglas of San Diego, and 23-year-old Petty Officer 2nd Class Carlos Victor Ganzon Sibayan from Chula Vista. The remains were found in flooded berthing compartments after divers gained access to the damaged spaces, according to the Department of Defense. The collision occurred about 64 miles off the coast of Yokosuka, Japan, during a training exercise, according to the U.S. 7th Fleet. The Japanese Coast Guard aided in the search and rescue effort. The damaged destroyer was able to return to its home port at Yokosuka, aided by tugboats, after the collision. Other sailors were injured and three required medical evacuation from the damaged Fitzgerald, including Bryce Benson, the Fitzgerald's commanding officer, who is reportedly in stable condition. Benson and the two other injured sailors were transferred to U.S. Naval Hospital Yokosuka. Navy Rear Admiral Charles Williams praised the extraordinary courage of the Fitzgerald sailors who contained the flooding, stabilized the ship, and sailed her back to Yokosuka despite the exceptionally trying circumstances undoubtedly preventing an even worse tragedy. Cause of the deadly collision remains under investigation. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Aiding El Cajon's homeless population and balancing the budget were among the hot topics discussed by the El Cajon City Council during meetings last week. At a budget workshop, Councilman Ben Colasso's proposal to reduce El Cajon's sales tax drew strong opposition, with critics arguing it would devastate law enforcement and fire protection in the city. The City Council voted 4-1 to allocate an additional $70,000 to the East County Transitional Living Center's emergency shelter program to help the homeless. Colasso abstained from voting, saying he wanted more information. After the meeting, Councilmember Kendrick was critical of Colasso's abstention. "It is ironic to me that four Republicans voted to approve the measure and the lone Democrat would abstain from voting," said Kendrick, who earlier justified the expense by stating, "I'm not going to throw women and children out on the street." The East County Transitional Living Center has drawn criticism in the past from citizens' oversight because the center is run by a religious organization. However, the emergency shelter portion funded by the city is not religious in nature, and no other organization has come forward to provide a secular program offering job training and other long-term help for the homeless. But that may be changing. Eric Lund gave the City Council a comprehensive proposal from the East County Homeless Task Force. The proposal includes a new homeless services app to help homeless people find services, a homeless reunification program, hiring a housing navigator and rental assistants to support Crisis House, rental assistance for 25 homeless families for Crisis House, funds for an East County Homeless Task Force director, a request for the city to consider converting another motel to a short-term shelter, providing four spaces at the animal shelter for dogs belonging to the homeless, panhandling signage, and more. Total funding for all items in the proposal to help the homeless would be over $196,000 if approved in the future by the council. Colasso, at a past meeting, introduced his own proposal to provide 20 city jobs for homeless people, but it was shot down due to liability concerns and the need to honor contracts with the city's labor unions. The most contentious remarks made to the City Council came during public comment sessions, when two residents voiced concerns over Councilman Colasso's recent actions and his age-based bashing of Councilman Bob McClellan in social media. In a Facebook post on May 24th, after a contentious session on redistricting, Colasso posted, "Who is voting for these guys? No, serious question, who? I literally sit next to an 84-year-old man on the dais." El Cajon resident Nathan Cornett criticized Colasso for the age-based remarks, stating, "That bothered me a lot." He then thanked McClellan for his years of service to the community. El Cajon Planning Commissioner member Tony Soteo criticized videos posted by Colasso, who he claimed were derogatory and contained half-truths. He called on the council to stop fighting and work together. Colasso did not apologize for his actions. Reporting for KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report on what's brewing in Lemon Grove. Breweries, brew pubs, wine bars, and distilleries may soon be opening up shop in Lemon Grove after the City Council approved a zoning amendment to make alcoholic beverage manufacturing businesses permissible by right in industrial and commercial zones. The new zoning, which was unanimously approved, allows for tasting rooms, outdoor patios, on-site catering, live music indoors, and recreational activities. One resident, Anita Lopez, spoke against the measure. She said the city should look at the detrimental effects of alcohol and not merely potential revenue. The measure does include a provision to ban sale of single-serve 32-ounce or larger containers of alcohol at certain settings, such as liquor stores, though they will be allowed at breweries and wine bars.
As for the new zoning to encourage beer, wine, and distilled spirit manufacturers to open up business in Lemon Grove, Councilman Jerry Jones says the goal is to create destinations that will be exciting for people to visit, boosting sales tax revenues and helping the city's economy. Creating new revenues is important for Lemon Grove, which has been struggling with budget problems for several years and even closed the city's recreation department. The city has a smaller property tax base and lacks large retail businesses to provide substantial sales taxes, the primary revenue sources that local communities rely upon. Also this week, Lemon Grove's council approved a budget for the next fiscal year, opting against providing raises to council or staff in order to prevent cuts to core city services. If wineries, breweries, and similar businesses do open up in Lemon Grove, they may soon boost the flow of sales taxes into the city's coffers, giving civic leaders good reason to say cheers.
Residents in parts of Del Cerro, La Mesa, and the college area around San Diego State University were left without power for around 2 hours in blistering heat on Monday after a Mylar balloon struck power lines. The impact, shortly before 10 a.m., caused a brush fire on Elaine Way in Del Cerro. San Diego Fire and Rescue Department reports the blaze was doused within 10 minutes, but it took until noon to restore power to the 1,200 customers affected, according to SDG&E's outage page. Fortunately, no homes or other structures were damaged. The incident serves as a reminder to properly dispose of used Mylar balloons and to never release them into the air, since, as this incident shows, they can spark fires if they come down onto power lines. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
Tuesday's blistering heat wave has set a new county record. In Ocotillo Wells, the temperature reached a sizzling 124 degrees, the hottest temperature ever recorded in San Diego County, according to Noel Isla with the National Weather Service. Borrego Springs recorded 122 degrees, tying a previous record for June 20th set last year. Temperatures in Ramona, Alpine, and other mountain areas reached the mid-90s. Now, in case you're wondering, the hottest temperature recorded anywhere on Earth occurred in Death Valley, California in July of 2013, when the mercury hit 134 degrees. That shattered a world record formerly set 90 years ago in Libya. San Diego's coastal areas were balmy by comparison, with high temperatures in the high 60s to low 70s. An excessive heat warning for San Diego County's deserts remains in effect through Sunday evening, with a heat advisory issued for the mountains and inland valley areas. If traveling, be aware that high heat can increase the risk of tire blowouts. So carry water and drink plenty of liquids to stay hydrated. Avoid strenuous outdoor activities during the heat of the day. Don't leave children or pets in hot cars even for a short time. Wear loose-fitting clothing to keep cool and check out air-conditioned locations designated as county cool zones at coolzones.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Rebecca Williamson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Gene Carpenter with the Green Scene Report. Helix Water District received a long-anticipated $8 million check on June 16th, officially marking the end of a six-year legal dispute over a 460-acre parcel of land that the water agency owned in Lakeside's El Monte Valley. The land sale is a result of a 2014 court settlement between Helix Water and the El Capitan Golf Club, which is now known as El Monte Nature Preserve, LLC. The payment is good news for customers of the Helix Water District, where hefty rate hikes to balance budgets led to a ratepayer revolt and ouster of two incumbent board members in last fall's election. But the final payment dashes hopes of El Monte Valley residents and Lakeside community planners who are opposed to El Monte Nature Preserve's proposed sand mining operation, which would extract 18 million tons of sand over 15 years from the El Monte Valley on the site. Residents have opposed the project based on noise, traffic, environmental, and health concerns due to presence of Valley Fever. The Valley is a designated county scenic view corridor and home to numerous threatened or endangered species. Long range, once mining is completed, the plan calls for turning the site into a nature preserve. If the new owner had defaulted on the final payment, Helix would have exercised its right to take back the land. The sand mine proposal is now pending environmental review and would ultimately need approval of both the County Planning Commission and county supervisors. The payment ends a long dispute that began back in 1997 when El Capitan leased the El Monte Valley property from Helix with plans to develop a golf course. Those plans were dropped in 2005, starting a costly legal dispute. Helix agreed to a settlement to allow sale of the land, which a district no longer needed, to El Capitan and avoid continued litigation. Helix agreed to a settlement to allow sale of the land, which a district no longer needed, to El Capitan and avoid continued litigation. Before completing the land sale, Helix was required by law to offer the property to other public agencies, including the San Diego River Conservancy, but none chose to buy it. The 2014 settlement allowed El Capitan, now known as El Monte Nature Preserve, to make a $1 million option payment, with the remaining $8 million due by December 2017. The final payment has now been made more than 6 months ahead of schedule. So what will happen to the money from that final land payment to Helix Water District? President Joe Scalzetti states, "Now board members have the task of deciding how to use the $8 million to best serve Helix ratepayers. Some serious and thoughtful discussions are ahead."
A fire alarm going off at the Oak Grove Middle School, where the Hamul Del Zuro Community Planning Group held its June 13th meeting, provided a jarring start to the session at which fire danger was top of mind for many present. The most heated agenda item sparked a robust debate on whether an unofficial shooting range on Federal Bureau of Land Management property should be permanently closed following a string of brush fires caused by shooting locally in recent years. The issue pits Second Amendment rights and access to public lands against safety concerns of residents fearful of wildfires. A video on social media appeared to show shooters starting the May 20th Gate Fire, which CAL FIRE is investigating. Numerous past fires are known to have begun on BLM lands by target shooters in the area. The Gate Fire charred 2,056 acres, forced evacuation of residents in Del Zora, and required 665 firefighting personnel to extinguish the fast-moving brush fire. After the Gate Fire, the BLM did close all federal public lands in San Diego County to target shooting, though the ban does not prohibit hunting. Some people have called for a permanent ban on target shooting at the site where the Gate Fire started, while others oppose this. Everyone present, even shooters, agree that seasonal closures are appropriate for fire safety reasons. Planning group member Hannah Bay opened the discussion by stating, "We know how important wildfire safety and gun rights are." She said she lives on a street with only one way in and one way out. She's concerned about fire safety and said that 22 fires in the past 5 years have started near Donahoe Mountain in Hamul. Supervisor Diane Jacob has asked Interior Secretary Zink to permanently ban target shooting on all federal lands in that area. In public testimony, Michael Johnson spoke on behalf of a group called SD Must that he says has been doing cleanups for 14 years, spending thousands of hours to try and make the shooting site safe. He voiced concerns that the amount of public land available for target shooting has dropped to less than 1%, with many public lands now protected as wildlife preserves or other uses. "There's more shooters every year and less places to shoot," he attested. Johnson said his group of volunteers offered to go cut the brush down, but he said he received no response to his repeated offers in the months before the Gate Fire. Several other hunters spoke against a permanent ban. One said the problems are caused by shooters using illegal materials, such as exploding targets. He called for more enforcement and said it's unfair to punish everyone for a few bad apples. Others nostalgically recalled learning to shoot and hunt on public land and said they want to teach their children those skills too. But other shooting ranges at Kitchen Creek and Hakumba have already been shut down. The problem has been made worse after a former BLM ranger retired, and his replacement has been given too large an area to patrol. Robert Williams said, "We need someone full-time down here." But that's not likely to happen, given President Donald Trump's deep budget cuts to the Interior Department, which includes the BLM. Another man from Hamul agreed the seasonal closure is fine, but not year-round. We keep losing more and more freedoms, he said. Tracy Nelson was the only audience member who spoke in favor of permanently banning shooting, though numerous others have been outspoken on community online forums supporting a ban. Every year there's a fire, she told planning group members. Every year it's getting worse. This is threatening my house and my kids and my pets. She also said the noise has robbed her of peace and quiet, even on holidays. Adding that she grew up target shooting, Nelson did offer a possible solution. Turning to the shooters, she suggested, I think you should all get together and buy a piece of land where you can do it. Planning group member Judy Bolin voiced anger over the amount of public lands no longer available to shooters, including some lands owned by the BLM as well as wildlife agencies, even though the public is paying taxes for those lands. Bolin said she believes BLM is not managing the land properly and wants it maintained and open during non-fire season. Others agreed. Bay continued, there must be a safe shooting area for the public, but made clear that it must be mowed, have signage improved, and a ranger present. She approves of seasonal closures, but said a total shutdown goes against our rural values. Vice Chairman William Hurd proposed that Bay draft a letter to the federal agencies, which will be brought back to the group for approval at the next meeting on June 27th. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is John Fisteer with a local government report from La Mesa. Like many cities and the state of California, La Mesa is grappling with the rising costs of generous pension benefits negotiated by labor unions years ago. Those agreements were made back when the economy was flourishing, but now rising costs are causing problems for cities' budgets. La Mesa faces a $1 million deficit to its $47 million budget in the fiscal year starting July 1st, due to higher contributions the city must make to its employees' retirement accounts. By fiscal year 2018, that deficit will rise to $1.7 million, and within 5 years, it will more than double, said La Mesa Finance Director Sarah Waller Bullock at a June 13th City Council meeting. Despite projected increases in revenue for the coming year, the city is facing rapidly escalating CalPERS pension costs. To cover the deficit, the city is constantly looking at ways of reducing its budget expenses while seeking alternate revenue sources, she said. The information didn't appear to alarm council members, who have been hearing city budget presentations since January and are expected to approve the final 2018 budget in August. One tried-and-true strategy for cutting expenses is reducing labor. This year, La Mesa eliminated one full-time and one part-time position, bringing its total workforce to 260. Next year, it's on track to eliminate two full-time positions. Another way of balancing a budget is bringing in more revenue or taxes. Fortunately, property and sales tax revenues have increased significantly in La Mesa, in part due to an improving economy, and in part to an 0.75% sales tax surcharge that voters approved under Proposition L in 2008. But the ongoing issue of increasing retirement costs will continue to impact La Mesa in the future, the city's finance director told the council. She noted that due to changes in the way CalPERS calculated its projected investments, the city's retirement costs are expected to rise by 10-15% annually, starting in 2017. The finance director cautioned the council, our pension costs are outpacing everything else.
Radio personality Cha-Cha from 106.7 FM will scale new heights and slither in new depths, all to help the hungry this weekend. She'll be broadcasting from inside an exotic jungle snake pit at Grossmont Center's courtyard on Saturday, June 24th, starting at noon, and she won't come out until at least 1,057 canned goods or dry food items are donated to help the San Diego Food Bank. You're invited to face your fears and help fight hunger in our community. Just bring a canned or dry food item, and you too can hold a snake from the San Diego Reptile Association. Geckos, turtles, and other reptiles will also be on hand. donors are encouraged to post pictures on social media and challenge others to overcome their fears, too, all for a good cause. Use the hashtag SnakePitChallenge. Of course, you can also skip the snake handling and just make a donation. School is out, but hunger is not. 1 in 5 children in San Diego County don't know where their next meals are coming from this summer. Every dollar donated will provide 5 meals. Cha-Cha will stay in the snake pit at Grossmont Center until 8 p.m. Saturday night, or until her donation goal is met. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
San Diego County Board of Supervisors has voted to appoint current Chief Deputy District Attorney Summer Stephan to serve as an interim district attorney. She will fill the vacancy left by District Attorney Bonnie DeManis, who is retiring on July 7th. The job is an elected post, but since DeManis is retiring 18 months before her term ends, the board is required to appoint an interim. Democrats have criticized the move as a ploy to install Summers, a Republican, making it all but inevitable that she would win re-election to the nonpartisan seat in November 2018. At the June 20th hearing, the board interviewed and reviewed the qualifications of 3 applicants, Stephan and former deputy district attorneys Adam Gordon and Gregory Walden. Stephan was the only finalist. The board voted 4-1, with Vice Chair Kristen Gaspar opposed, to appoint her immediately rather than hold a scheduled meeting on June 27th to review finalists and make its selection final. Stephan has served as a deputy district attorney in the San Diego County District Attorney's Office for 27 years. She has also served as chief of the Sex Crimes and Human Trafficking Division. She was appointed chief deputy district attorney in 2012. She has tried over 100 jury trials involving sexual assaults or homicides, human trafficking, child abuse or molestation, and a school shooting, according to her biography. Her tenure was not without controversy, however. She led the prosecution of teenager Michael Crow and 2 of his friends for the murder of his sister, 12-year-old Stephanie Crow. Under interrogation by Escondido police detectives, Michael Crow confessed to the crime, but charges were dropped when his sister's blood was found on the shirt of a transient, Richard Tuitt. Tuitt was convicted but later acquitted in a retrial. DeManis is retiring after serving as district attorney for almost 15 years. The Office of the District Attorney prosecutes felony crimes countywide and misdemeanor crimes in 18 cities and unincorporated areas countywide. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Rebecca Williamson.
Firefighters from the Lakeside Fire Department performed an unusual animal rescue last week. A motorist discovered that a large gopher snake had crawled up into the vehicle's tire well, becoming trapped inside. Fortunately, the firefighters were able to remove the tire and free the entangled serpent. You can view photos of the department's engineer, Danny Leach, holding up the large and lucky reptile on the department's Twitter feed. Reporting for East County Magazine from Lakeside, this is John Fistier.
CAL FIRE Captain Isaac Sanchez has asked media to remind the public about several new laws passed by California's legislature last summer to address problems raised by drones that interfered with firefighting, including drones that caused delays in water drops by aircraft onto fast-moving fires. Senate Bill 807 grants first responders immunity from liability for damaging a drone that is interfering with emergency operations. The measure applies to firefighters, search and rescue, emergency medical, ambulance, and air ambulance personnel. It also includes paid public employees, private contractors, and volunteers. Another measure, Assembly Bill 1680, makes flying a drone over a fire and interfering with emergency personnel a misdemeanor. Previously, the drone operator had to be physically at the scene of the emergency to be charged. Now, only the drone has to be at the scene, regardless of where the operator is located. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Rebecca Williamson.
just days after the sheriff's department issued an advisory urging hikers to avoid the Three Sisters Falls and Cedar Creek Falls trails, during this week's excessive heat warning, the department had to rescue 8 hikers in distress on the Three Sisters Falls trail in Cleveland National Forest on Saturday afternoon. 2 of the hikers were airlifted out of the steep terrain, and another was transported by ambulance to a local hospital. 5 others were evacuated on the scene and released, Times of San Diego reports. The trails to both waterfalls are very steep, with no shade for long stretches. Even on cool days, the trails are recommended only for those in top physical condition who bring along plenty of water. Cell phones often won't work in the canyon areas, often making it difficult to call for help when needed. So far this year, the sheriff's search and rescue volunteers and Astrea helicopters have responded to 24 distressed hiker calls at Three Sisters Falls and Cedar Creek Falls, which are beautiful but treacherous for those venturing into these areas unprepared. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
A driver suspected of being under the influence of alcohol has sustained serious injuries in a freak accident that occurred around 2:45 in the morning last Friday in Santee. The 28-year-old woman was driving her Toyota Yaris sedan north on State Route 125 when she failed to stop and went straight through the fence along the San Diego River at the intersection with Mission Gorge Road, becoming airborne. Sergeant Mike Mitchell with the Sheriff's Department says the vehicle came to rest in the riverbed about 75 feet north of the intersection. The driver sustained serious injuries. She has been taken to Sharp Memorial Hospital for treatment, and the investigation is ongoing. The intersection is the same place where California Highway Patrol Officer Mark Saylor and 3 of his family members died in 2009 after their vehicle's accelerator pedal became stuck, sending the rental vehicle airborne through the barricade and into the riverbed, where it burst into flames. That crash led to a recall of millions of Toyota and Lexus vehicles. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fisteer.
This is Jordan Damon with a local government report from Lemon Grove. Lemon Grove City Council has voted unanimously to ban alcohol and marijuana use in public parks, effective July 1st, just in time for summer activities. Mayor Pro Tem Jennifer Mendoza says this will help us revitalize our parks and make them more family-friendly and more desirable to all of our residents and visitors. The city held a Take Back the Parks event at Lemon Grove Park recently to remind residents of the new laws and kick off the summer of outdoor concerts and movies. While some may mourn the loss of freedom to chill out with a cold beer in their local public park, Narden Georges of the East County Youth Coalition calls banning alcohol and marijuana in Lemon Grove parks smart, adding, "The new law will allow my friends and me to be physically active and have fun in our parks," he says. Anita Lopez is program manager for the Lemon Grove Healthy Eating Active Living Program, which organizes walks for seniors in the city's parks. Lopez praised the ban, stating, "This new law will make our parks cleaner, safer, and more enjoyable as we go on our weekly walks to promote a healthier lifestyle." Lemon Grove will kick off its annual summer concert series June 29th in Berry Street Park, and movies in the park will begin on July 14th.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes the return of caboose rides at the Campo Railway Depot, the Broadway Tenors on stage at Sequan, a flea market in Alpine, and Elvis tribute artist Scott Bruce in El Cajon.
Plus, preview coming attractions, including 4th of July fireworks, parades and picnics, Descanso Days, the Pine Valley Parade, astronomy atop Mount Helix, and music superstars Lionel Richie and Mariah Carey coming to Viejas Arena at San Diego State.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
You can ride the rails aboard a historic train at the Campo Railway Depot each Saturday from now through mid-October. The Golden State train departs at 11 a.m. each Saturday, or you can ride the Valley Fire Caboose, departing every half hour between 1 and 3 p.m. Visitors of all ages can also enjoy the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum. For more information, visit their website at psrm.org.
The Alpine Mountain Empire Chamber of Commerce invites you to the Alpine Flea Market this Saturday, June 24th, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Joan McQueen Middle School, 2001 Tavern Road in Alpine. You're invited to shop for treasures and browse vendor booths.
The Broadway Tenors will perform at Sequan's Live and Up Close Theater on June 25th at 7 p.m. Three of Broadway's leading men will transport you from the golden age of musical theater and back again in an evening of Broadway's most beloved hits. For tickets and details, you can visit sequan.com.
Elvis tribute artist Scott Bruce will shake, rattle, and roll with your favorite Elvis Presley songs on Friday night, June 30th, from 6 to 8 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. It's all part of the Dinner in a Concert series all summer long in Prescott Promenade Park. For a full lineup of artists, visit downtownelcajon.com.
Now, for a preview of coming attractions.
On Saturday, July 1st, the Rancho San Diego Library will host an early Independence Weekend celebration from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The family-friendly celebration will include music, games, refreshments, and crafts, plus story time with Miss Rancho San Diego, as well as performances by Sparkles the Clown. There will also be booths, crafts, and kids' games.
If you want to start celebrating Independence Day weekend early, Viejas Casino and Resort invites you to a Freedom Festival on July 2nd from 7 to 9 p.m. You're invited to celebrate the American spirit with live music and cuisine from around the country at the hotel pool, followed by a fireworks show over the park at Viejas. For details, you can visit viejas.com.
Julian proudly proclaims its annual 4th of July parade to be the best small-town parade in America. The parade starts with the firing of a cannon and also includes earlier flyovers by vintage aircraft, a gunfight and bank robbery staged by the Julian Doves and Desperados from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. The parade itself starts at noon and includes equestrians, marching bands, floats, and more. Plus, there's a barbecue and dance at the American Legion, as well as drawings for vintage airplane rides, sky sailing, and a handmade quilt displayed at Julian's Town Hall. Main Street closes at 9 a.m., so arrive early to enjoy this patriotic event in historic Julian. For full details, visit julianparade.com.
The City of El Cajon invites you to celebrate Independence Day with numerous games, live musical entertainment, and fireworks at the City of El Cajon's 4th of July celebration at Kennedy Park. From 1 p.m. to 8 p.m., you can enjoy carnival games, an inflatable, a kiddie train, and a skate park. Free crafts and family games will be available from 2 to 6 p.m., with music by two live bands from 3 to 9 p.m. A fireworks show with synchronized music at 9 p.m. will provide a finale to the celebration of our nation's birthday.
Alpine will celebrate Independence Day with a 4th of July parade starting at 10 a.m. along Alpine Boulevard between West Victoria Boulevard and Tavern Road, bringing back a tradition that's been dormant for years. The parade's grand marshals will be Bill Ridenour and Fred Higginbotham, both local World War II veterans now in their 90s, who have been instrumental in adding many names of local veterans to Alpine's Wall of Honor. The parade route ends at the Alpine Community Center, where a carnival will include a petting zoo, bounce house, dunk tank, games, and children's activities. There will also be a Wild West show, live band, barbecue, and beer garden. For details, visit alpinekiwanis.org.
The City of Santee invites you to celebrate Independence Day at Santee Salutes, held on July 4th from 2:30 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East. Visitors can rock out with live music, see a patriotic ceremony, enjoy a kids' fun zone, and a spectacular fireworks display at 9 p.m. For details, visit the City of Santee's webpage and click on the events calendar.
Red, White, and Moo will be the theme of this year's Descanso Days Parade and Fair on July 8th. The parade starts on Viejas Grade and ends at the elementary school. The festival will be held at the Descanso Town Hall. For more information, visit descansotownhall.org.
The Deerhorn Valley Independence Day Parade and Picnic returns this July 4th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Spectators are encouraged to bring flags, drums, rattles, shakers, and lawn chairs to enjoy the festivities. Community members are invited to march in the parade, including wagons, bikes, trucks, horses, goats, and emus. If it moves, it can march, the flyer proclaims. The parade stages at McNeil's Field at Lower Elena and Deerhorn Valley Road at 9 a.m. At 10 a.m., the parade rolls out, led by Deerhorn Valley's mounted flag bearers. The parade ends at the McKinley Field picnic area. You can also enjoy local vendors and crafters, plus a potluck-style dessert and goodies table.
Mount Hillocks Park is partnering with the San Diego Astronomy Association to host Astronomy Night atop Mount Hillocks on Saturday, July 15th from 8:30 to 10:30 p.m. Bring your own telescope or witness the cosmos through one provided. Feel free to bring a picnic dinner and enjoy a spectacular sunset prior to stargazing.
Music superstars Lionel Richie and Mariah Carey will rock the night at Viejas Arena at San Diego State University on July 27th at 7 p.m. as part of their All the Hits tour. Richie has won an Oscar, 4 Grammy Awards, and 16 American Music Association Awards. He defied his parents and joined a band to escape Alabama and become one of Motown's biggest success stories. Mariah Carey is the best-selling female artist of all time, with more than 200 million albums sold to date and 18 Billboard number one singles, the most of any solo artist in history. Carey has won 5 Grammy Awards, 9 American Music Awards, and the World Music Award for World's Best-Selling Female Artist of the Millennium. Tickets are available at the Viejas Arena website.
Pine Valley Days takes place July 28th and 29th. The annual tradition begins on Friday, July 28th, with a deep pit barbecue and live music by Barb Wire. Then on Saturday, July 29th, the Pine Valley Days Parade rolls out through the town, followed by a day of fun, festivities in Pine Valley Park, including kids' activities, arts and crafts, vendors, live music, food, and a horseshoe tournament. For details, check the Pine Valley Days 2017 page on Facebook.
The Julian Apple Pie Grand Prix will be held on Saturday, July 29th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. This year's vintage sports car show, parade, and festival is a salute to the sports cars of Great Britain. Cars will be on display on Main Street from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., followed by a parade of these vintage cars that will proceed to Mangini Winery for a public viewing and festival until 5 p.m. The festival will feature live music, plus food, beer, and wine available for purchase.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County. See you around, East County.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show, with some late-breaking news about an exciting addition to the East County 4th of July schedule. After several years on hiatus, the beloved San Diego Lake Murray Music Fest and Fireworks Show is coming back on July 4th from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. A fireworks show will follow at 9 p.m. The music festival is held at the Lake Murray Community Park in San Carlos. The Day of Fun includes food vendors from local restaurants, markets and service clubs, music from live bands, and fireworks. The fireworks can be seen throughout the Navajo community, from La Mesa to Del Cerro and beyond. For more information and a full schedule of bands, you can visit lakemurrayfireworks.org.
On Monday, the San Diego City Council voted 5-4 to put FS Investors' plan for a new soccer stadium and home for San Diego State football in Mission Valley on the 2018 ballot next November instead of on the ballot for this November. The San Diego Union-Tribune reports, the project, Soccer City, prompted a crowd of supporters and protesters at the City Council chambers downtown on Monday and attracted celebrities in the soccer world, such as former U.S. men's national team star Landon Donovan, who was at the meeting handing out shirts to supporters. Despite the appearance on the ballot, it will appear 1 year later than supporters wanted, unless there is a special election, which can only be held if 5 council members voice their support before August. Soccer City is a $4 billion plan to revamp Qualcomm Stadium into a soccer stadium, housing, retail, and river park area. Major League Soccer is promising 4 new soccer franchises to select cities. Supporters worry that the delay could cause them to reconsider San Diego's candidacy. The council, however, felt that delaying the vote for a year includes time to work with San Diego State and fit Aztecs football into the plan somehow. SDSU released a statement about the council's ruling on Monday. "We appreciate the support from the San Diego State University alumni and community members who spoke today at City Council on behalf of a fair and open process. We look forward to working with the city and other key stakeholders to evaluate the best use for the Mission Valley property with the goal of securing the future home for Aztec football and growing the university's academic and research endeavors, which benefit all of San Diego. SDSU is a growing and thriving institution of higher education that has been part of San Diego for 120 years, and we remain committed to working collaboratively with the community for generations to come. Although I have been an advocate for economic development, local quality jobs, and the idea of having a major sports team in our city, I want to take the necessary measures to address the concerns brought to us by our city attorney and explore all of the viable options in the redevelopment of Qualcomm Stadium," Council President Myrtle Cole said. Two council Republicans, Scott Sherman and Chris Kate, expressed support for a special election, saying it was unfair to voters and supporters but were overruled. San Diego Mayor Kevin Faulkner expressed his disappointment with the decision. "The council's decision significantly jeopardizes our chance to bring Major League Soccer to San Diego and create a river park at no cost to taxpayers," Faulkner said. Regardless of whether they personally supported or opposed Soccer City, council members should have given San Diegans the chance to vote when it mattered the most. "Despite the council's delay, I will keep working for the park space, housing, and economic benefits in the Soccer City plan." Public Land, Public Vote, an opposition group, praised the council. "This decision gives the city time to move forward with an open and transparent process for soliciting competing proposals," the coalition said in a statement. "While we are thrilled with today's victory, in many ways, it is only the beginning. We will now be taking our case to all of the residents in San Diego, and will be working to demonstrate our grave concerns with the Soccer City initiative to city voters over the next several months." Steve Altman with FS Investors said opponents do not know how dire a vote this year is needed. "If San Diego votes this year, the outcome of whether we get an MLS team is in our collective control," he said. "In business, it is a terrible strategy to bet your company's success solely on your competitor's failing." Opponents say the development would increase traffic around the Qualcomm Stadium area and also claim that this is a front for FS investors to secure taxpayer-owned land. FS has structured this initiative to instantly reap a massive windfall of valuable development rights worth hundreds of millions of dollars, said Joe LaCava, spokesman for Public Land, Public Vote. "It's a windfall for FS that would be the largest transfer of taxpayer wealth in San Diego history." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Liz Alper.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, AK Jules, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.